Bob, Dave, and Lord on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle, Thursday edition of the program. Coming up, got the voice of your Seattle Mariners, one of the voices. Aaron Goldsmith will join us at the bottom of the hour as we get set for the intra-squad game happening tomorrow. You can catch it right here on 710 ESPN Seattle at 2:30. John Clayton talking football with us at 4 o'clock. Our buddy John Morosi at 4:30. We'll talk baseball with him. And then Yogi Roth, the president of the Paul Feinbaum Fan Club, will join us at 5 o'clock. So we'll talk some college football with him, and the news coming out of college football, not great. We'll get to some of that. Dave, I know you're here. Is Jim here yet?
I'm not sure.
Where's Jim?
Oh, he's having technical problems.
Is that what's going on? I thought he was just upset about what I tweeted earlier, because there was a tweet. You'll enjoy
it. Did you stick it to him?
No, it was really mocking the just imbecilic nature of Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless tweeted out, and this was a serious tweet, why LeBron would have no chance against Tyson in a fight now on Undisputed. And I'm like, what, are you kidding me? This is a topic. You really? Tune in? So I said, you've got to be kidding me. All right, then. Today on Bob, Dave, and Moore, why Cougs Go has no chance of being the next head coach of the Seahawks. Don't miss it. It's just... That's a real topic. Well, why LeBron? Here, I'll tell you why I've got no chance against Usain Bolt in a 40-yard dash. I mean,
yeah. We need baseball. Oh, in other words, please
sports.
Give us some baseball to talk about. Yeah, but I'll say this though: I think that Jim might actually take LeBron, because using the same sort of logic that he uses with me and Chris Sale. Number one, Chris Sale has the reach on me.
Yeah.
So LeBron would have the reach on Tyson, and then also Tyson's old. And he said, "I'm old," and Chris Sale is young, so I think Jim would probably take LeBron in that matchup.
He probably would. All right. Well, as soon as Jim is connected, we'll bring him into the conversation. But coming up, we got news coming out of our very own Jake Heaps. I don't know if you heard this, Dave, but he was talking today. Said he's got a source in the Jets organization that told him that the Seahawks are actively pursuing Jamal Adams.
I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine who works in a front office on the other side of the country for an NFL team, and we were talking, and he actually said, "So your Seahawks are really into Jamal Adams?" And I was like, "Excuse, like,
excuse
what do you mean
me?
By that?" Right? Yeah, like, what? Oh, okay, I'm interested. I'm interested. and they're another team that's interested in Jamal Adams, and he said, "Yeah, the Seahawks are absolutely pursuing the Seahawks, or the Seahawks are absolutely pursuing Jamal Adams in this situation."
What do you make of that, Dave? I mean, I love who he is as a player. There's no debating. You'd love to see him in a Seahawks uniform. Now, does that address a pressing need for this team? If they were pursuing a trade, I'd be much more excited if we heard Seahawks pursuing trade with Yannick Ngakoue. You know, as much as we've talked about how teams can manipulate their salary cap, and you almost don't even pay attention to what they have left. Oh, they've got $8 million, $6 million, whatever it is, because the teams find ways to make room. We talked about it yesterday with our guy from SpotTrack. So does this address a need, or is this the theory of let's build from the back to the front the way Belichick does?
Well, yeah, I mean, I could see them doing that, and I do think that that they probably view that as important as a pass rusher. Where I kind of ended on Yannick Ngakoue was watching all of the sacks that he got with tremendous pressure coming from the other side, whether it was Calais Campbell or Dante Fowler. A lot of his stats I thought were – I mean, he's a good pass rusher. There's no question, but – but the other thing I got out of this, now, I don't know if you set it up this way, Bob, said that he had a source with the Jets organization. I think he said there, maybe we can listen to it again, but he said, "I know a guy that works in the front office of a football team on the East Coast," I believe is what Jake Heap said.
Oh.
Did he later on say he actually said
Well, the cut is labeled. The cut is labeled. Jake Heaps has a Jets source. So yeah. I was going here's well. Let's play the next one. He says he was led to believe that Jamal would be willing to play this year under the current deal for a contender.
You know, the thing that is interesting about that, and talking with this source is, you know, asking him about, okay, well, what is Jamal Adams asking for, right? What does he want ultimately? And to me, Jamal Adams is in a Quentin Dunbar situation. He either wants a new deal that is going to match his talent with the New York Jets, or he wants to be traded to a very good team. So if you talk about it from that standpoint, guys, I'm all in on Jamal Adams.
What do you think of that? That makes him more palatable, well, doesn't it? Financially.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, if he wants to play for, you know, what he's playing for right now, it looks to me like, what are they? They're trying to franchise tag him.
I believe. I don't know if they were doing it, because I don't think his deal is up.
Yeah. Okay.
So he. I'm looking at the.
Yeah, I was looking at the wrong thing. Yeah, 825, according to SpotTrack, by the way. Or however you say that, SpotTrack. 825. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, gosh, I watching him play, I mean, he's a guy I've noticed in the league, but, you know, he's one of those guys that that plays up on the line of scrimmage quite a bit. I mean, he's got 12 and a half sacks, and he's just a really aggressive hitter. He's a hammer, Bob, and that's what they need. They need a hammer. Now, you know, you have some guys like Bradley McDougal. We'll see about Marquise Blair, if maybe he can play strong safety. You know, there's lots of candidates back there. You know, you've got Quandre Diggs, of course, but, I mean, this guy's legit. And, you know, like whoever I was quoted saying, look, this guy's a really good football player. They would have to, you know, probably give up quite a bit to get him, you know, maybe package up some deals as far as draft choices go. But, man, I think it's really important. I mean, you think about the really good defenses. You know, honestly, if I'm to give credit to one position group, and, you know, for a while there, I was pretty big on the corners because it's just so hard to play corner. And when you have a guy like Richard Sherman, who's so good, you don't have to worry about it. But the safeties were kind of the heart and soul of that team. And, you know, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, that's, to me, that position group made that defense. It wasn't the pass rush, you know. And, look, everybody was good, but – And especially Sherman, but man, those two guys, if you get that, and look how competitive that's going to be. You know, when we went through and looked at some of the free safeties, you know, of course, Ugo Amadi's in that mix, Marquise Blair, McDougal. Remember that Chris Miller guy that I looked at? That guy was the hardest hitter in college football last year. Now he's an unrestricted free agent, or I'm sorry, undrafted free agent rookie, but man, the guy is also a really good hitter. So you put all of a sudden you bring in Jamal Adams into this mix, that's going to be the most competitive position group by far. So
who suffers with his presence then? Would it be Blair? I saw some I'll look it up on Twitter. Somebody had like three different trade proposals surrounding the Seahawks that they'd package, you know, of the 2021 first rounder and a second rounder and a fourth rounder, you know, all these picks, or, you know, other ones included, you know, picks and Marquise Blair, and other ones included another player. I can't remember who it was, but, you know, just kind of, you know, speculating what would it take to get him. But yeah. Is Blair the obvious man out? I mean, is it McDougal? Is it Blair? Is it what does his presence mean to the group of players that are currently there?
Yeah, I was thinking that same thing. Like, who would be the guy that all of a sudden, you know, just never even got a shot here? You know, because I feel like your rookie year, I mean, you got to kind of let that one go and see, you know, judge him in his second year. But, you know, it could be Ugo Amadi. It could be Marquise Blair. It could be Bradley McDougal. You know, if they bring him in here. Now Quandre Diggs can play free safety. I feel like it's going to be. And look, let's not go to sleep so much on Bradley McDougal. I mean, he didn't have the year that we all thought that he was going to have, but, man, when they brought him over from Tampa.
He fit right in.
I remember, Yeah, he did. And, you know, he had to wait a little bit. But I remember Schneider saying to me, he goes, this is a big deal, man. This guy's a really good player. And then, you know, he came out in 2018 and really had a good year. He was really a key addition to that defense. So, and one of the reasons why they made it to the playoffs that year, were they 10-6 in 2018? So, I was thinking that same thing, Bob, like, okay, who's going to be the guy that gets shipped out of here that we never really even, kind of like a Jacob Martin last year.
Yep.
Because that's what they did with him. And Jacob, I really liked him. I know when he got shipped off, I was really bummed, you know, about him and Barkevius Mingo. And I remember having a discussion with Moyer about it. He's like, yeah, but that guy's not, you know, he's not anywhere near in the class. But I remember arguing that I think Jacob Martin is going to be. And we'll see how that works out. I mean, he had 3.5 sacks last year with Houston, played really well. Looks like, you know, they're talking about him being one of those guys that can come off the edge and be a real good, you know, pass rusher. So, you know, this could be the same type of story with Marquise Blair in his second year, you know. And he played pretty well. I mean, when the times that he got in there, I remember him standing out, mostly his hitting ability.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, and I think it'll really put a lot of pressure on probably Bradley McDougal the most if you're able to get this. But Jamal Adams, man, I'm watching his feet. I mean, I always talk about the sewing machine.
You know,
the feet.
Yeah.
Just
quick little steps.
Yep. And he is a hitter, man. You see some of the hits that he has. He plays up in the box. So really tough guy. And yeah, I mean, I could totally see Pete wanting to be in the mix for getting him out here, because I think safety is really important. Pete's an old safety himself. You know, he played safety at UOP, and, you know, he's always coached defensive backs. That's kind of where he cut his teeth in the NFL. And I've always said I feel like he has a lot more to say and to do with those guys being good than we think. I mean, he's the head coach and everything, but I think he does a lot of coaching of, you know, not just the players, but also the position coach. You know, that he wants them to play a certain way, and they've been very successful, and he's been very good at developing defensive backs, especially safeties.
Well, Jake, just getting back to something you talked about, Jamal Adams and his hitting ability, and sort of comparing that to Chancellor, Jake seems to be on the same page with you there.
I think that could be a really dynamic trade and a big boost for the Seahawks that could really make that defense and that defensive backfield back to that Legion of Boom, you know, type of status again. Because Jamal Adams, as much as we reminisce about Cam Chancellor, Jamal Adams is a generational talent at that position and plays very similarly to Cam.
So you guys are on the same page in terms of viewing him as that type of a player. I mean, it's. I'd be very interested to know, A, what would it take to actually get him here? Because the Jets aren't in a great position. He's made it clear he doesn't want to be there. That's been clear. It feels like an untenable situation. So they don't have a ton of leverage. Yeah, there are going to be a ton of teams that want him and would be willing to part with some draft capital, but would it be what we saw, say, Jalen Ramsey bring back in exchange to Jacksonville when he went to St. Louis, right? A couple of first-round picks. And would you get more than that? Would you get less than that? Because it feels like they're just in a spot where we got to get something out of this guy because he doesn't want to be here, and he's going to want to sign a new deal. So let's get what we can out of him.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I see on the show sheet that Mike Tannenbaum, you know, said that, you know, his potential compensation he thought for Adams would be like a first round pick and maybe another high second. So, you know, it'd be some kind of, and like I said earlier, you know, they think he's a really good player. So it's going to cost him. But I guess, you know, the Seahawks are always in the mix for, you know, guys like this. So, you know, maybe if they really like Marquise Blair, say, or, you know, they really like Bradley McDougal, they think they can get him in there and play, you know, close to what Jamal Adams, maybe they'll take a player and just a draft choice. Who knows? But, you know, it's clear the guy doesn't want to play there. So that's one thing that, you know, I think opposing teams, when a team doesn't want to play somewhere and wants to be traded, and, you know, it really, I just think the teams are more likely to let them go than we think. because, you know, you have a guy that's there in your locker room that's saying basically, I do not want to play here. Yeah, that's you know, that doesn't exactly lead the charge for enthusiasm for
when
the team.
It kills your leverage as a team, right? Because every other team that's interested in him goes, well, they have to get rid of him. I know they have to get rid of him. They can talk about how great he is, but he's made it clear he is not willing to play there, does not want to be there. And that's what team wants a malcontent in their locker room, a guy that's angry about being there.
Right. Well, and let's look at, you know, just Clowney. I mean, Bill O'Brien ended up paying, what, $7 million, I think, of the $16 million that
Clowney got?
Yeah, and really, I mean, he did. Look, I love Jacob Martin and Barkevius Mingo, but those, I mean, the difference at that time, to follow up on, you know, Moyer's argument, is that, yeah, I mean, that was – that was quite a bit different. And then especially, you know, you get a guy like Bill O'Brien, who's kind of the boss down there and supposedly the owner's afraid of him and, and all that. You know, he's gonna let somebody go. I'm with you, Bob. I think that a team will definitely let, you know. So he's rattling his sword about a first and second rounder. I don't know about that. I think, you know, it gets down to camp time, kind of like it did with Clowney. It's like, this guy doesn't want to be here. We want to move on. All right, I'll take, you know, a player and maybe a second-round draft choice or something like that. So, you know, I think right now he's saying that. But I think when it gets down to it, like you said, it's you might be able to get him, I don't want to say cheap, but I think get him for something less than, you know, it looks like on the surface anyway.
Now, let me ask you this before we get to take two here. Would there be any, and I understand the difference in who these players are before people flip out. Would there be any part of you that'd be reluctant to give up Marquise Blair? Because we really haven't seen how good he may end up being, and maybe he won't be that guy. I know Jim's got his doubts and wrote that story, and I teased Jim about hating him. But, you know, just, hey, everybody's saying he's so great. How come he didn't get on the field if he's that great? I mean, so there are some people certainly on the other side of his potential. Would you feel like, oh, man, he feels like he's really got something there. I'd hate to give up on that. Or is Jamal Adams just that good to where you go, that's a risk you're willing to take?
Well, it's a great question, but I'll always go back to this, that the biggest mystery is whether or not a guy who played really well in college is going to be able to play really well in the pros. Do we know for sure that Marquise Blair is going to play really well in the pros? Just to take him as an example, maybe it's Ugo Amadi, you know, maybe it's, you know, Cody Barton, whatever. You know, and I realize he's not a safety. I'm just saying, you know, rookies, you don't really know. I mean, he played pretty well. You expect them to take that big jump, but they don't always. You know, there are disappointments. Jamal Adams, we know, can play. So, yeah, there is a little bit of, just like with Jacob Martin. You know, and I don't even know Marquise Blair. We've never talked to him. I know he's a very quiet guy, but I've always liked the way he's played. But, shoot, you know, you watch Jamal Adams, you got, you know, it's like bird in a hand, right?
Right.
I mean, you know that this guy can play. So,
the proven
commodity. I would be, you know, and I would hate it if they shipped off, I keep saying shipped off, I don't know, traded away Marquise Blair, and he was just a, you know, a monster on the field. I would hate that, but you got Jamal Adams. So, you know, I mean, I think that would help ease the pain.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk much more about this coming up, but let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
The Big Ten has decided to go with a all-conference schedule this fall. The Athletic's Nicole Arbach reports that the Pac-12 is expected to do the same in the near future. UW was slated to take on Michigan for their season opener.
That's a bummer. That's not trending the right way for me to remain optimistic about football and college football. So they're going conference only, and that wipes out UW versus Michigan. I'm waiting to see. I don't feel like this is the end of it. I retweeted Michael David Smith, who said the commissioner of the Big Ten just said on the Big Ten Network, we may not have sports in the fall. We may not have a college football season. So I'm hearing the wrong things, Dave.
I know. It's so disappointing. And, you know, and I guess you kind of knew that they were going to shave games off. Because at first I was like, well, what? They don't. Is it the travel? But, no, I think, you know, it's like the Seahawks, or I'm sorry, the NFL. You know, they're shaving off a couple of preseason games so far. So, but, you know, if you're going to cut games, you would, and you're going to keep some. Yeah, I understand that you're going to go in conference, regardless of, you know, how far away they are, and you know, but yeah, it's just so disappointing. And I'd love to see. I was kind of looking forward to seeing the Huskies play Jim Harbaugh, see him on the sidelines, because I don't watch that much Michigan football or Big Ten football, but. It'd be interesting to watch that happen, and it's like you said, Bob. It's just it's going the wrong way right now.
The Seahawks have now joined many other NFL teams in offering season ticket holders either a refund for the 2020 season or a credit to their account for 2021 renewal.
It seems like, and I know every franchise is in a different financial position, but you're still talking about billionaires here. It feels like this should be just the standard move, the right move. And I'm glad to see the Seahawks do it. We've seen the Ravens do it. We've seen the New York Giants do it. And I'm sure there were some other teams that have done it we haven't talked about. But it just feels like, you know what, it's such an unprecedented time. And I understand financially what it means, but it's the right thing to do by your fan base.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, somebody expecting to get paid for not doing something, and you know what? Why would you expect to get ticket revenue for if there's not going to be games and or they're not going to be allowed in there? So, yeah, it's the right thing to do, and it's kind of like we talked about with the A's. You know, financially and on the books, it's terrible for them, but you know, you should pay your minor leaguers, and the A's decided to not do that, and I just feel like this is going to really create a lot of goodwill. I feel like the Seahawks, honestly, I'm biased, but I feel like the Seahawks have the best relationship with their fans, with the 12th man flag and how much they make a big deal out of our fan base and sort of celebrating them and having them out for practices and stuff. So it doesn't surprise me, but I think this is something that will, you know, further build that strong relationship between the franchise and the fans here.
All right, coming up, we've got live baseball on 710 ESPN tomorrow at 2:30. How about that? Aaron Goldsmith, voice of your Seattle Mariners, one of the voices, will be joining us next to talk about the Mariners intra-squad game that he and Rick Riz will be calling. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We've got actual baseball happening tomorrow right here on 710 ESPN Seattle at 2:30. A Mariners intra-squad game. You'll be able to check that out. A couple of voices you're familiar with. Rick Riz and this man will be on the call. Our buddy Aaron Goldsmith is with us. Aaron, how are you, man?
Doing very well, guys. We got real baseball coming up. How about that?
You must be going crazy. I know listen, I'm a longtime baseball fan since I was a kid. I love the sport. I understand all the slings and arrows it takes, but I still love it. I can't imagine what you've been going through. Just wondering, am I going to be able to watch baseball, call baseball, everything being pushed off? What's this been like for you?
It's been probably for me like it has been for everybody else in their own walk of life. Just from the uncertainty that we've all been living through and the lack of a routine, I think that's probably been the biggest, just no routine. Even this morning, my wife and I, you know, we wake up, we've got three kids, and we look at each other and we're like, what are we going to do today? What are we doing to keep everybody busy? But you're right. It has been, we've been trying to stay as positive and glass half full as we can. You know, I will never, hopefully, I will never have a July 4th again where I don't work. I've worked every July 4th since I've gotten into baseball, and I hope I work every July 4th for many, many, many years, decades from now. But it was special to have a July 4th with the family this year, from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep. So there are things like that which I'm incredibly grateful for. But when it all comes down to it, obviously, this is what we do. This is what we're put on this earth to do, professionally speaking, is to call baseball games. And it's what we love doing more than anything else. So I know I speak for Rick and for Gary also. We're thrilled to get back to the booth tomorrow, get back to the ballpark, and have a little sense of normalcy for a couple of hours.
Yeah, Aaron, you know, I didn't realize how much I miss people. I even miss Jim. I mean, it's crazy.
How about in the first half hour?
No, I can see you saying that in like maybe December, man, but it's a little early for that, I think.
Okay. Hey, have you been around the ballpark? And I've seen a few things, like Divish had a tweet. I think it was Kelenic cracking a home run, and Kyle Lewis went out there and kind of lit up some pitches. What have you seen out there? And, you know, who are you looking forward to watching? I mean, there's so many exciting young players on this roster.
No, you're right. It's a unique roster, a really, really cool roster for a lot of reasons. I have not gone out for any of the practices, the inter-squad practices that they've had so far. The Mariners, and the Mariners are not alone here. Every other team is saying the same thing. Unless you really need to be there, they obviously want to keep the numbers down at the ballpark, and there's no need for me to be.
Apparently, we haven't fixed our phone problems we had
going
on yesterday.
There's our wonderful phone.
Jeez. We'll try to effort Aaron Goldsmith. Hopefully we can get him back before the segment ends, and maybe we can get an engineer in here. There'd be an idea. I think we have Jim back with us. Speaking of engineers, Jim, are you here?
Yeah, I am here. You should have seen, I had Mikey helping me, and I was unplugging every cord I could think of and then plugging them back in, and turning the router off and turning it on. And I'm back, Bob. What solved the problem finally was turning the laptop off and then turning it back on again, and it seemed to work. So,
which is like the first bit of instruction you get from any sort of helpline you call for technical advice. If you try turning it off and turning it on.
Yeah, it's sorry about that, you guys. I was all prepared with a bunch of stuff about Jamal Adams, too. Did you guys get to the bottom of that?
Yeah, we figured it all out. It's
Did
all
you?
Good.
Okay.
Yep, we've all solved right. the world's problems. We've got the Seahawks roster in hand. Everybody is going to be great. Looking at a 16-0 season, Jim.
Okay. So you trade what? A first-round draft choice and Marquise Blair to the Jets for Jamal Adams? Is that what you guys figured out you wanted to do?
I think it could be lower than that as far as the draft choice goes. Could be a guy like that, because that's kind of what they did with Clowney. You know, they sent off Jacob Martin and Barkevius Mingo. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Bob and I were both kind of agreed on the fact that it looks like you get a lot in the beginning, but then the bigger the guy becomes a malcontent, and the more you get closer to the season and you want to move on and get your roster set, I feel like those numbers come down. So I would say, you know, Marquise Blair and maybe a second.
Yeah, well, we can get deeper into that. I think we've got Aaron back with us, and hopefully the phone lines will last. We apologize, Aaron. I don't know if you know where you left off, but feel free to continue.
No, you got out from underneath that bridge I was standing underneath. It was my fault, I'm sure. I think the cool thing about this 60-man roster, and like, let's be honest, right? Like, I think we all realize that a lot of these players that we're all so excited to see when their time comes, like, we're not going to more than likely see this in an actual big league game. Like, we're probably not going to see Julio Rodriguez play for the Mariners this year. We're probably not going to see Jared Kelenic play for the Mariners this year, but they're there. And, you know, Noelvi Marte, I know, is a guy who's generated a lot of buzz on social media for good reason the last couple of days for just looking how he does as an 18-year-old. But for me, the incredible thing is thinking back just a handful of years ago when the Mariners had the worst-ranked farm system in baseball. And then they drafted Kyle Lewis. And it was like, all right, you got a guy. You got Kyle Lewis, a bona fide Golden Spikes Award winner, bona fide stud who you project to be not just an everyday big leaguer, but a well-above-average everyday big leaguer and an all-star caliber talent. But, like, that was it, right? It was like Kyle Lewis, and now we're just, like, waiting for more drafts, trades, bolstering, getting the system better. Jerry's done that in the last handful of years. And it's one thing to see get together in the minors or in spring training, whether it be on a backfield or even in the Peoria Sports Complex, but to see all those dudes in T-Mobile Park, right? And, like, we haven't even talked about the pitching side of things, like the Logan Gilberts of the world, like the next wave of guys, including the guys who've kind of graduated, right? I mean, like the J.P. Crawfords, kind of think of Justice Sheffield as kind of in that class as well, even though we didn't see him a ton in the big league level last year. You see all those guys together in our ballpark, it kind of lets you know that this is not that far away, which is incredibly exciting.
Well, Aaron, you got Sheffield and Dunn going at it in the intra-league game tomorrow here on 710 ESPN Seattle at 2:30. What'd you see from Sheffield and Dunn there at spring training, the brief look that you got at them?
Jim, it's an inter-squad game. It's the same league. It's an inter-squad game.
What did I say, inter-league?
Both teams are in the American League.
Oh. Hey, Aaron, it's really rare when I screw up, so I appreciate that.
You know, for Sheffield, the pandemic came at a bad time for everybody. But, you know, for Sheffield, if you guys remember in spring training, like he just threw out this two-seamer in his last start of spring that was had the looks of this incredible pitch and really a game-changing pitch for him. And then everything got shut down. So I'm excited to see for him if that picks up where it left off and if that is something that he feels will be as big of a game-changer for these 60 games as in this in like a week's worth of time it was looking like it could be in Peoria, which is, you know, not always the most reliable test kitchen, but the only test kitchen that we're given normally. And also for him, his changeup, I think for Justice, him continuing to perfect and hone that pitch will be a difference maker for him. And obviously for Dunn, he's somebody who's going to probably really benefit from the Mariners, like many other teams, moving to a six-man rotation. I mean, the Mariners will be in a six-man rotation this year, it sounds like, and they will also be in one next year as well, because the dynamics of this, I don't think we really have focused much on what next year will look like from a pitcher standpoint after an abbreviated 2020. I mean, you can't be Marco Gonzalez and throw 200 innings in 2019, throw, let's say it's 60 innings in 2020, and then go throw 200 innings again in 2021. Like, they just, the body can't take it. His arm can't take it. It's not really advisable. So I think you're going to see kind of a carryover of six-man rotations into next year as well. And Dono's the guy who obviously came in as kind of a, what's his future going to be for this year? What will his role be exactly? So I would have to imagine that this is a good thing for him as a starting pitcher.
Aaron, we appreciate the time. We apologize for the phone issues, and hopefully we can get you back and have a longer discussion about this Mariner team. But looking forward to hearing you and Riz tomorrow on the intra-squad game again, 2:30, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We appreciate it, man.
We're excited, guys. Good talking to you.
There you go. Aaron Goldsmith of your Seattle Mariners broadcast team. A pleasure to speak with him. We've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. The Mariners score 21 runs against the Angels back in 2000. That's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. Coming up, Jerry DePoto was on with Danny and Gallant this morning, and Major League Baseball has already released the 2021 schedule. We'll talk about that coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. So you got us with you wherever you go. You can listen to the show live. You can listen to the show podcast. You can text it. You can do it all from that app. So if you don't have it, go ahead and download that. Coming up at the top of the hour, we got the Professor John Clayton joining us on the program to talk some football. So if you have football questions, you can start texting those in. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Meanwhile, Jerry DePoto on with Danny and Gallant this morning hit a few different things. He started out by talking about just, you know, dealing with the COVID protocols and everything that's being put in place with Major League Baseball and how proud he is of the staff and the way they've dealt with it.
I really couldn't be prouder, again, of Joe Borringer and Kyle Torgerson and Trevor Gooby, the people who really have made this all happen from the very start for the Mariners. And our players have been incredible. You see the footage or you've been out at the park, and there's rarely a moment when they're not doing something that's full exertion, that they're not wearing masks and everybody is exercising the appropriate social distancing and the like. They've been great in following the guidelines.
And I would feel like that's the least you could expect from any organization, right? Or in terms of the players just sort of respecting whatever rules are put in place, whether you agree with them or not, here's what it's going to take to get the season underway and get us to the point where we can play baseball and worry about just baseball. I mean, I appreciate that they're adhering to it right now. I would hope we don't hear about it being a problem anywhere else, because it really does feel like it's a minimal effort on the part of the players just to say, all right, I'm going to follow whatever rules they put in front of me. That's how we need to play baseball. Then this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I guess following the rules is one thing. But to me, like your rituals of what you do, like the no spitting and everything. I mean, that would be something that you might just try as hard as you can, but just forget. But, you know, I would think every baseball organization would say, look, guys, we have to do this because, you know, number one, if you can prevent any, you know, further positive tests, but also just, you know, the look of it, and we really want to play. So let's make this like a number one priority. And I could kind of hear that in Jerry's voice that it sounds like they really emphasize that. I was going to ask you guys this. Yesterday when I got the MRI, you know, and I had to go into that tube, I told the technician, I'm like, I can't get in there with this mask on. I just can't. And he's like, okay, go ahead and take it off. And I, because, you know, already I was like claustrophobic and everything. And I'm just wondering, you know, if a guy goes, you know, from second to home or, you know, a long sprint, you know, either around the bases or out, you know, how much that's going to affect those guys and how difficult that's going to be for them.
To you just talking to breathe and function, you mean?
Yeah, just breathing.
Yeah, I haven't done any, you know, when I'm wearing the mask out in public, I'm in a grocery store or Costco or whatever, so I'm not exerting myself. I'm not really sure what that would be like. I don't really feel any sort of limitation to the way I breathe or anything. I know some people have felt differently, and that's fine. I haven't felt like, oh man, I'm having a hard time breathing with this thing on for so long. It doesn't feel that way, but I'm also not sprinting either. So I'm not. That'll be an interesting question.
Well, I think it's an issue with people that wear glasses. I mean, you know, you guys know me. I mean, I wear glasses at night to drive, and I haven't had my mask on when I've been driving at night. But the glasses fog up, but it's such a small right. thing compared to the bigger issue of trying to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. So it seems to me everything I've read, everything I've heard, the TV reports about the Mariners, all these guys are so serious about what they're doing. The Mariners are doing a great job with that. The biggest problem is when they get away from the park, you know, is everybody following what they should be doing? And I admit, I carry in the console my Ridgeline there, I've got two or three masks, but it's still not... I still don't have it ingrained in me when I get out of my truck to get the mask on every single time. I mean, 85% of the time, yeah, I do it. And then, but there's still that 15% of the time where I'm walking away from my truck and I'm going, oh, yeah, I forgot my mask. So, but I think that these guys have probably had so many different meetings and they know the importance of following the rules that I think that even when they're away from the park, I like to think that even though they're in their 20s and 30s and maybe not as much risk as somebody like me, that they're going to be following what they're supposed to do.
Jerry went on to talk about how the 60-man player pool works and when a player tests positive for COVID.
So there's a little bit to unpack there. But once you put a player on the COVID list or the inactive list, you can replace him with a player from within your 60. If we add a player to our 60, whether it be from outside our organization or signing a free agent, we can't exceed our 60-player pool limit minus the player on the inactive list. So whenever that player or players comes back from the COVID list, or frankly any other, could be any other normal baseball injury, we are not able to exceed 60 players outside of players who are on extended, you know, injured list programs. Like right now, Mitch Haniger would qualify for very different reasons. But the idea being that you don't have the advantage of having 65 and 70 players while another team is operating with 60.
So a little bit there, and he goes a little further in terms of what's going on with Mitch Haniger in the 60-man player pool spot.
Correct. He would have to be among the 60. And right now we feel like those, for obvious reasons, those spots are gold. And, you know, if our understanding is with Mitch that minimally he's not going to play for an extended period and there's a very good chance that he doesn't play at all in 2020, we want to use that spot on a player who is either A, developing, or B, has the opportunity to – to help us here in Seattle if a need arises.
Does that give you any sense of where they're at with Mitch Haniger? I mean, he certainly left the door open that he may not play at all in 2020, which wouldn't be stunning because he's going to be on the 60-day DL, which Shannon has made clear is essentially a 45-day DL in this circumstance. But I don't know if we're going to see him at all, and I don't know if there's any reason to push him or rush him if, in fact, that's the case. He's coming back from injury. He's not quite ready. Is he? What's the point?
Yeah. Well, maybe this will actually end up helping him, you know, that it's not that big of a priority, and maybe he can just, you know, get healed up. Boy, it's amazing. We talked about it a couple days ago, but just how far, when we were talking about Jake Fraley and the outfield and everything, how far it's gone downhill for him. And I felt bad for him. You know, he got hit in the face, and then he had the groin thing, and then he had, you know, the disc problem. I mean, it's been terrible for him, and he's just one of those guys that that you think, wow, we just entirely forgot about Mitch Haniger because, you know, he's been injured so much, and it's a shame for him.
Well, yeah, and it just took us all by surprise. I remember January when the Mariners, before they went down to Peoria, we heard this news about Mitch Haniger. We were expecting to hear that he'd recovered from, you know, the groin area pitch that he took, and yet this discectomy or whatever came up. And so, yeah, it just makes you wonder. I wonder about his future, and you wonder about his present, too, and whether he's going to get out there. I would bet that he's not going to play this year. I mean, what, 45 days takes you, what, to the end of August, somewhere in that area. So, and then you got September left with a 60-game season. So, not sure what the point is, but I'll bet you anything Haniger is going to be fighting like mad, though, to get some at-bats before this season's over.
All right, coming up, we'll find out what the professor thinks about Jake Heap's update on the Seahawks' interest in Jamal Adams. Also, you guys have questions for him, just text them in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We talk football with John Clayton coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.